Thank you for listening to this episode of the Financial Freedom Pensions and Retirement Podcast, curated by a partnership of Ontario and Alberta-based pension plans to highlight the value of workplace pensions and the importance of saving for retirement. Hello, I'm Andrew Fung, Acting Executive Vice President of Pensions with the Financial Services Regulatory Authority of Ontario. As the provincial regulator of pension plans in Ontario, we are raising awareness about the benefits of participating in a workplace pension plan. That's why each year in February, we organize Pension Awareness Day, and we are excited to have organizations across the pension industry collaborating with us on this important initiative.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. My name is Jason White, and I'm here on behalf of OP Trust, one of Canada's largest defined benefit pension plans. Fortunately, though, we're not here to talk about me today, so let's get straight to our guests, the reason that we're all actually interested to listen. Today, I'm joined by Sheila Block, who is a senior economist with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Sheila, thanks for joining us today. Sheila's research focuses largely on Canada's labour markets, public finances, and inequality, but today she's here to discuss a report that she produced with her colleagues in 2021 called Color-Coded Retirement. The report delves into the retirement income gap for racialized and Indigenous seniors in Canada, discusses the barriers and potential solutions to a more equitable retirement system. Sheila, thank you for joining us today. And can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, the CCPA, and what exactly you do there?
So I work at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives Ontario office. We have a focus on Ontario government policies, labour market policies. We know that a lot of government policies that have an effect on day-to-day people are actually at the provincial level. That's our focus. I do have a history of having bargained pensions with the steelworkers for about 10 years, wow, and also was on a couple of jointly sponsored pension plans. And so I think that's why I wanted to write this paper with my colleagues and why I found it of particular interest.
Mm-hmm. So you have a specific background and interest in the retirement system.
Correct.
And so, of course, the reason we're here is to discuss this fascinating report that you and your colleagues produced together. Can you tell us a bit about the report and what your findings were?
So we wanted to look at two things. We wanted to look both at retirement incomes, and we wanted to look at retirement savings. And in looking at retirement incomes, we wanted to look at it for Indigenous populations, and which included First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people. And we also wanted to look at it for the racialized population and do a disaggregation. So we looked at the three largest racialized groups in Canada, which is people who identify as Black, those who identify as South Asian, and those who identify as Chinese. And we wanted to understand retirement incomes, both in terms of where people were getting their retirement incomes. Were they from private pensions? Were they from public pensions? Were they from employment? And also understand savings. And I think the big picture that we took away from this is that the kind of racism and discrimination that people face throughout their working life continues into retirement. And the way that kind of was concretely manifested was we saw how retirement incomes were lower both for Indigenous people and for racialized people. And for racialized people, their average employment income was 32% below those of white retirees. And for Indigenous people, it was 25% below that of white retirees.
What would you say was the most interesting thing that you found through the course of your research?
Well, I think one of the most disturbing things I found through the course of the research is that there is the impact of racism and discrimination throughout your working life, of course, also has an impact on your likelihood to be living in poverty and your retirement incomes. And so the impacts of color-coded labor market continue into people's retirements. And it wasn't surprising, but it was a pretty kind of difficult result to look at and to quantify.
Actually, it's what I found so interesting about the report is we, you know, learn a lot in our sector about the gender gap in retirement. And of course, you were doing an intersectional analysis, so gender played into your research as well. But we, you know, talk a lot about how the impacts of disparities in pay for women in working years impacts retirement. You know, women not only live longer and more likely to receive a lower income, but these things all compound when you're talking about retirement. So it's interesting that that plays out, while not being the exact same way, in a similar outcome for racialized and Indigenous Canadians.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is the way you describe it, as a compounding effect, where all of the impacts in terms of, you know, what kind of jobs you're steered into, whether the quality of those jobs, whether they're likely to have either a pension plan associated with the job, or whether they have pay enough so that you can do some private savings, all of those factors kind of combine and then have that impact on retirement incomes, for sure.
So would you say then it was the workplaces that were the biggest barriers, the difference of workplaces for each group that were the biggest barriers to a more secure retirement, or were there some other barriers that you encountered in your research?
So I think there are also the factors that lead into workplace issues, right? So the racism in the education system that results in people, you know, not having necessarily access to certain forms of education or being streamed into other forms of education. But of course, in this kind of issue, the end result of this is, where do you get to work? How much do you get paid? What are your opportunities for advancement in your work that all can contribute to your retirement savings? And absolutely, it's the culmination of those factors.
What were you seeing as the broader impacts for Indigenous and racialized Canadians having that less security in retirement?
Well, the first thing that you see is increased poverty rates. Obviously, that's the most obvious one. And then I think it's about it. I think it's really a question of justice. You know, I think we think about retirement and retirement incomes as people having contributed throughout their working lives, and either through their lives, through child rearing, through contributions to community, and then you come to this spot at the end of your working life where you want people to have that security of their income and not to have that fear of having an inadequate income, and also not having that discomfort and yeah. of living in poverty, and not requiring people who are have made this contribution to society at the end of their working lives and at their end of their lives to be suffering. And I think inadequate incomes contribute absolutely to that kind of suffering.
And it leaves people fending for themselves, yeah. where, you know, we've all contributed to the economy and then, you know, done work that's important to the country over the course of our careers. There's benefits to everybody having that security in retirement. Broader benefits than just to them, of course, but to the economy and to the government as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in some ways we do have systems that support seniors more than we have systems to support other populations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have indexed benefits for seniors, unlike people who are trying to survive on social assistance. So there are those measures in there, and they have reduced poverty rates, but they have not eliminated them. And currently in this higher inflation environment, for people who have private savings or pension plans that aren't indexed, I think there is, currently a huge squeeze on seniors, and that's something hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. And in the report, you mentioned that measures to address systemic racism could ultimately result in an increase in access to workplace pension plans. Can you elaborate on that?
So I think we really need to look at how that systemic racism plays out in the labor market and work to address it. And some of the ways that you can do that is by instituting pay transparency. Mm-hmm. And there have been some moves, limited moves at Ontario to do that recently this year. Because with
bigger moves in New York State and some places across the border, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And that pay transparency makes it more difficult to discriminate in that kind of a way. Mm-hmm. So then you're talking about how much people are paid once they've got a job. We also have to look at who gets what jobs. And I think part of that is really looking at an employment equity program. Mm-hmm. And really looking at asking employers to look at who they have hired, so analyze who is in their workforce, and then really look at their hiring practices and processes to determine whether those practices and processes are discriminatory or not, and to see and to set targets and to set some objectives to see whether they can get their workforce to more accurately reflect the population that they're serving. So I think that's that kind of employment equity is important and would really improve access to good jobs, and good jobs often most often come with pensions.
Of course, yeah. Couldn't agree more. Partially, you see it as addressing those barriers before they have the chance to compound. It's, you know, if we're going to find solutions for retirement, they start as early as possible within someone's career, or even before that.
Yeah, and so then we have other areas of systemic racism that we look at before people get the access to the education to actually join, to apply for a high quality job. So we have to look at, you know, how does racism in the education system play out, and that how is access to education, and do lower income families have good access to higher education? Which students are streamed in what ways? It goes back fundamentally to some of the things that we look at in terms of how the justice system and police treat populations, and in particular young Black men. We just had another study out of the Human Rights Commission last week that talked again about the disproportionate and over-policing of young Black men.
Mm-hmm. And the impacts. Did you look at the impacts that have in terms of your career path and workforce as well? Or?
Well, I think what we know about it is that there are jobs that require police checks that right. You will not have access to if you have some kind of a record.
Right.
So we know that there are those impacts absolutely, and absolutely on people's career paths.
So while we're talking about workplaces, different career paths, can you talk about your perspective, you know, as a labor economist? What are some of the advantages to employers to offering a workplace pension plan?
Well, I have an interesting thing that I do when I speak to younger people about pensions, and to really startle them. I talk about how, you know, in the olden days, employers had relationships not only through the working life of an employee, but after their death through pension survivor benefits. And I've had many young people look at me with, you know, strange looks in their face and maybe a little jealousy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where it's really workplace pensions can play a really important role. I think for the first time in many decades, we are moving into a period of labor shortages, or of at least more competition for labor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the ways that you can be competitive is by offering enhanced benefits, including pensions. I also think it's a way, I think employers are increasingly finding it difficult to retain their workers, and I think pensions provide a big incentive for retention as well. So I think they can really round out total compensation. And I think they are they're kind of a public good in that way, I mm-hmm. think. So I think they can really add to a competitive package for employers.
Actually, Stephen Poloz has been speaking a little bit recently about the age of uncertainty that we're entering, as he describes it. And one of the things he's noted is the potential for expanding large-scale defined benefit pension plans, or more likely government programs, to help push up against that uncertainty because of the stability they provide. Not sure exactly where I was going with that, but the way you're
saying about
certainty.
I think we are in very much so in a heightened age of uncertainty. I think there is a lot of change happening economically very quickly, and I think there's an importance around kind of proper regulation of pension plans, mm-hmm. In order to protect and sustain that pension promise. And I also think it really calls for some level of portability for pension plans, because I think people contemplating entering the labor force 40 or 50 years ago could much more easily imagine staying with that employer for 40 or 50
right.
years than they can now. And so I think those are two aspects that absolutely have to be addressed by workplace pensions in order to make them function well. I mean, I think public sector pensions are in a little bit of a different position because, mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously less churn in governments, in government than there is in the private sector. So that's a big difference. But I also think that's why public pension plans are so important, is they are, you know, follow you from job to job to job, and they are certainly a safe place for your retirement savings, as are all registered pension plans.
I couldn't agree more. In your research for this paper, did you look at the different experience for young people? You know, you were noting that obviously the career paths for young people are changing compared to their parents' generation. Did you touch on that specifically with this intersectional lens?
No, because of the data limitations. And we
right.
actually only looked at people who were 25 and over in terms of retirement savings, because partially because of the different demographics between the different population groups. So Indigenous population is younger than the white population, and the racialized population is white. So we didn't want to have the results skewed by that. But also we were looking at kind of how are adults saving for their retirement. And again, I think that's an important question, and that's one that we can't really even start to answer without better data.
Okay. You know, moving sort of more to a personal side of thing, you mentioned earlier that you're approaching retirement yourself. Is there anything that's been on your mind about that, especially with your background and the research you've done over the years?
Well, I think it's interesting for me because I will be collecting three pensions when I've retired. And I think that it's, pensions are hugely important, right? And even with my kind of disrupted work life and my disrupted pensions, they are gonna be a very important contribution to the comfort and stability of my life after retirement. So, so I think, yeah, I did have a moment where I thought I really shouldn't have changed jobs so mm-hmm. often when I was looking at them. So I think, I guess I'm a personal testament to the importance of portability in pensions mm-hmm. since I've moved around quite a bit.
Well, it's one of the biggest challenges about retirement is that it always seems like it's an impossible way away, and then
there
creeps
you are
up on you.
To the my internal shock.
Yeah. So Sheila, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Is there any other message you'd like to leave our listeners with, both about this research or more broadly as well?
So I think what this research really confirmed for me is that the impacts of racism continue throughout our working lives and continue into retirement, and that it's really something that we need to collectively address. I think the other thing that it really left me with is the importance of public pensions for marginalized populations, and how we need to, along with increasing access to private pension plans, we actually need to improve public pensions as well.
More pensions for everybody.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Sheila. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Please visit www.fsrao.ca/pension-awareness to learn more about pensions and planning for your retirement.